like, might be we met him on the King's Road.
At least the house and field had not been burned, and there were no corpses about. Tarber found a garden out back, and they pulled some onions and radishes and filled a sack with cabbages before they went on their way. A little further up the road they glimpsed a forester's cabin surrounded by old trees and neatly stacked logs ready for the splitting, and later a ramshackle stilt house leaning over the river on poles 10 feet tall, both deserted. They passed more fields, wheat and corn and barley ripening in the sun. But here there were no men sitting in trees, nor walking the rows with scythes. Finally the town came into view, a cluster of white houses spread out around the walls of the Holdfast, a big sept with a shingled wooden roof, the Lord's Tower House sitting on a small rise to the west, and no sign of any people anywhere. Yoren sat on his horse, frowning, through his tangle of beard.
"Don't like it," he said, "but there it is. We'll go have us a look, a careful look. See, maybe there's some folk hiding. Might be they left a boat behind, or some weapons we can use."
The Black Brother left 10 to guard the wagons and the whimpery little girl, and split the rest of them into 4 groups of 5 to search the town.
"Keep your eyes and ears open," he warned them, before he rode off to the tower house to see if there was any sign of the lordling or his guards.
Arya found herself with Gendry, Hot Pie, and Lummy. Squat, kettle-bellied Woth had pulled an oar on a galley once, which made him the next best thing they had to a sailor, so Yoren told him to take them down to the lakefront and see if they could find a boat. As they rode between the silent white houses, goose prickles crawled up Arya's arms. This empty town frightened her, almost as much as the burnt Holdfast where they'd found the crying girl and the one-armed woman. Why would people run off and leave their houses and everything? What could scare them so much? The sun was low to the west, and the houses cast long, dark shadows. A sudden clap of sound made Arya reach for Needle, but it was only a shutter banging in the wind. After the open river shore, the closeness of the town unnerved her. When she glimpsed the lake ahead, between houses and trees, Arya put her knees into a horse, galloping past Woth and Gendry. She burst out onto the grassy sward beside the pebbled shore. The setting sun made the tranquil surface of the water shimmer like a sheet of beaten copper. It was the biggest lake she had ever seen, with no hint of a far shore. She saw a rambling inn to her left, built out over the water on heavy wooden pilings. To her right, a long pier jutted into the lake, and there were other docks farther east, wooden fingers reaching out from the town. But the only boat in view was an upside-down rowboat abandoned on the rocks beneath the inn, its bottom thoroughly rotted out. "They're gone," Arya said, dejected. "What would they do now?"
"There's an inn," Lummy said when the others rode up. "Do you think they've left any food or ale?"
"Let's go see," Hot Pie suggested.
"Never mind about no inn," snapped Woth. "Yoren said we're to find a boat."
They took the boats. Somehow Arya knew it was true. They could search the whole town, and they'd find no more than the upside-down rowboat. Despondent, she climbed off her horse and knelt by the lake. The water lapped softly around her legs. A few lantern bugs were coming out, their little lights blinking on and off. The green water was warm as tears, but there was no salt in it. It tasted of summer and mud and growing things. Arya plunged her face down into it to wash off the dust and dirt and sweat of the day. When she leaned back, the trickles ran down the back of her neck and under her collar.
They felt good. She wished she could take off her clothes and swim, gliding through the warm water like a skinny pink otter. Maybe she could swim all the way to Winterfell. Wath was shouting at her to help search. So she did, peering into boathouses and sheds while her horse grazed along the shore. They found some sails, some nails, buckets of tar gone hard, and a mother cat with a litter of newborn kittens, but no boats. The town was as dark as any forest when Yoren and the others reappeared.
"Tower's empty," he said. "Lord's gone off to fight, maybe, or to get his small folk to safety, no telling. Not all so big left in town, but we'll eat. Saw a goose running loose, and some chickens, and there's good fish in the God's Eye."
"The boats are gone," Arya reported.
We could patch the bottom of that rowboat," said Cuss.
"Might do for four of us," Yoren said.
"There's nails," Lummy pointed out, "and there's trees all around. We could build us all boats."
Yoren spat.
"You know anything about boat building, Dyer's boy?"
Lummy looked blank.
"A raft," suggested Gentry. "Anyone can build a raft, and long poles for pushing."
Yoren looked thoughtful.
"Lake's too deep to pole across, but if we stay to the shallows, near shore, it'd mean leaving the wagons. Might be that's best. I'll sleep on it."
"Can we stay at the inn?" Lummy asked.
"We'll stay in the old fast, with the gates barred,"
the old man said.
"I like the feel of stone walls about me when I sleep."
Arya could not keep quiet. "We shouldn't stay here," she blurted. "The people didn't. They all ran off, even their lord."
"Arya's scared," Lummy announced, bray in laughter.
"I'm not," she slapped back, "but they were."
"Smart boy," said Yoren. "Thing is, the folks who lived here were at war, like it or no. We're not. Night's watch takes no part. So, no man's our enemy."
"And no man's our friend," she thought. But this time, she held her tongue. Lummy and the rest were looking at her, and she did not want to seem craven in front of them. The Holdfast gates were studded with iron nails. Within, they found a pair of iron bars the size of saplings, with post holes in the ground, and metal brackets on the gate. When they slotted the bars through the brackets, they made a huge X-brace. It was no Red Keep, Yoren announced, when they'd explored the Holdfast, top to bottom, but it was better than most, and should do for a night well enough. The walls were rough, unmortared stone, 10 feet high, with a wooden catwalk inside the battlements. There was a postern gate to the north, and Geron discovered a trap under the straw in the old wooden barn leading to a narrow, winding tunnel. He followed it a long way under the earth and came out by the lake. Yoren had them roll a wagon on top of the trap to make certain no one came in that way. He divided them into three watches and sent Tarba, Kurtz, and Cutjack off to the abandoned tower house to keep an eye out from on high. Kurtz had a hunting horn to sound if danger threatened. They drove their wagons and animals inside and barred the gates behind them. The barn was a ramshackle thing, large enough to hold half the animals in the town. The haven, where the town folk would shelter in times of trouble, was even larger, low and long and built of stone, with a thatched roof. Cuss went out the postern gate and brought the goose back, and two chickens as well, and Yoren allowed a cook fire. There was a big kitchen inside the Holdfast, though all the pots and kettles had been taken. Gendry, Dubba, and Arya drew cook duty. Dubba told Arya to pluck the fowl while Gendry split wood.
"Why can't I split the wood?" she asked, but no one listened.
Sullenly, she set to plucking a chicken while Yoren sat on the end of the bench, sharpening the edge of his dirk with a whetstone. When the food was ready, Arya ate a chicken leg and a bit of onion. No one talked much, not even Lummi. Gendry went off by himself afterwards, polishing his helm with a look on his face like he wasn't even there. The crying girl whimpered and wept, but when Hot Pie offered her a bit of goose, she gobbled it down and looked for more. Arya drew second watch, so she found a straw pallet in the haven. Sleep did not come easy, so she borrowed Yoren's stone and set to honing needle. Sirio Farrell had said that a dull blade was like a lame horse. Hot Pie squatted on the pallet beside her, watching her work. "Where'd you get your good sword like that?" he asked. When he saw the look she gave him, he raised his hands defensively. "I never said you stole it, and just wanted to know where you got it is all." "My brother gave it to me," she muttered.
"I never knew you had no brother."
Arya paused to scratch under her shirt. There were fleas in the straw, though she couldn't see why a few more would bother her. "I have lots of brothers."
"You do? Are they bigger than you or littler?"
"I shouldn't be talking like this. Yoren said I should keep my mouth shut." "Bigger," she lied. "They have swords, too. Big, long swords, and they showed me how to kill people who bother me."
"I was talking, not bothering."
Hot Pie went off and left her alone, and Arya curled up on her pallet. She could hear the crying girl from the far side of the haven. "I wish she'd just be quiet. Why does she have to cry all the time?" She must have slept, though she never remembered closing her eyes. She dreamed a wolf was howling, and the sound was so terrible that it woke her at once. Arya sat up on her pallet with her heart thumping.
"Hot Pie, wake up!"
She scrambled to her feet.
"Wath! Gendry! Didn't you hear?"
She pulled on a boot. All around her, men and boys stirred and crawled from their pallets.
"What's wrong?"
Hot Pie asked.
"Hear what?"
Gendry wanted to know.
"And he had a bad dream,"
someone else said.
"No, I heard it," she insisted. "A wolf."
"Harry has wolves in his head," sneered Lummi.
"Let them hell," Geron said. "They're out there. We're in here."
Wath agreed.
"Never saw no wolf could storm a hole fast,"
Hot Pie was saying.
"I never heard nothing."
"It was a wolf,"
she shouted at them as she yanked on her second boot.
"Something's wrong. Someone's coming. Get up."
Before they could hoot her down again, the sound came shuddering through the night. Only it was no wolf this time. It was Kurz blowing his hunting horn, sounding danger. In a heartbeat, all of them were pulling on clothes and snatching for whatever weapons they owned. Arya ran for the gate as the horn sounded again. As she dashed past the barn, Biter threw himself furiously against his chains, and Jaqen H'ghar called out from the back of their wagon,
"Boy, sweet boy, is it war, red war, boy? Free us! A man can fight, boy!"
She ignored him and plunged on. By then she could hear horses and shouts beyond the wall. She scrambled up onto the catwalk. The parapets were a bit too high and Arya a bit too short. She had to wedge her toes into the holes between the stones to see over. For a moment, she thought the town was full of lantern bugs. Then she realized they were men with torches, galloping between the houses. She saw a roof go up, flames licking at the belly of the night with hot orange tongues as the thatch caught. Another followed, and then another, and soon there were fires blazing everywhere. Gendry climbed up beside her, wearing his helm.
"How many?"
Arya tried to count, but they were riding too fast, torches spinning through the air as they flung them.
100, she said. 200, I don't know.
Over the roar of the flames, she could hear shouts.
They'll come for us soon.
There, Gendry said, pointing. A column of riders moved between the burning buildings toward the Holdfast. Firelight glittered off metal helms and spattered their mail and plate with orange and yellow highlights. One carried a banner on a tall lance. She thought it was red, but it was hard to tell in the night, with the fires roaring all around. Everything seemed red or black or orange. The fire leapt from one house to another. Arya saw a tree consumed, the flames creeping across its branches until it stood against the night in robes of living orange. Everyone was awake now, manning the catwalks or struggling with the frightened animals below. She could hear Yoren shouting commands. Something bumped against her leg, and she glanced down to discover the crying girl clutching her. "Get away!" She wrenched her leg free. "What are you doing up here? Run and hide somewhere, you stupid—" She shoved the girl away. The riders reined up before the gates. "You, in the Holdfast!" shouted a knight in a tall helm with a spiked crest. "Open, in the name of the king!"
"Aye, and which king is that?"
Olraysen yelled back down before Wath cuffed him into silence. Yoren climbed the battlements beside the gate, his faded black cloak tied to a wooden staff.
"You men hold down here," he shouted. "The town folk's gone."
"And who are you, old man? One of Lord Beric's cravens?"
called the knight in the spiked helm.
"If that fat fool Thoris is in there, ask him how he likes these fires."
"Got no such man here,"
Yoren shouted back.
"Only some lads for the watch. Got no party, you war."
He hoisted up the staff so they could see the colour of his cloak.
"Have a look. That's black for the night's watch."
"Or black for House Dondarrion,"
called the man who bore the enemy banner. Arya could see its colours more clearly now in the light of the burning town, a golden lion on red.
"Lord Beric's sigil is a purple lightning bolt on a black field."
Suddenly, Arya remembered the morning she had thrown the orange in Sansa's face and gotten juice all over her stupid ivory silk gown. There had been some southern lordling at the tourney. Her sister's stupid friend Jane was in love with him. He had a lightning bolt on his shield, and her father had sent him out to behead the Hound's brother. It seemed a thousand years ago now, something that had happened to a different person in a different life. To Arya Stark, the Hand's daughter, not Arry, the orphan boy. How would Arry know lords and such?
"Are you blind, man?"
Yoren waved his staff back and forth, making the cloak ripple.
"You see a bloody lightning bolt? By night all banners look black,"
the knight in the spiked helm observed.
"Open, or we'll know you for outlaws in league with the king's enemies."
Yoren spat.
"Who's got your command?"
"I do."
The reflections of burning houses glimmered dully on the armour of his warhorse as the others parted to let him pass. He was a stout man with a manticore on his shield, an ornate scrollwork crawling across his steel breastplate. Through the open visor of his helm, a face pale and piggy peeped up.
"Sir Aemry Leitch, bannerman to Lord Tywin Lannister of Casterly Rock. The hand of the king, the true king, Joffrey."
He had a high, thin voice.
"In his name, I command you to open these gates."
All around them, the town burned. The night air was full of smoke, and the drifting red embers outnumbered the stars. Yoren scowled.
"Don't see the need. Do what you want to the town. It's naught to me. But leave us be. We're no foes to you."
"Look with your eyes," Arya wanted to shout at the men below. "Can't they see we're no lords or knights?" she whispered. "I don't think they care, Arry," Gendry whispered back. Then she looked at Sir Aemry's face, the way Sirio had taught her to look. and she saw that he was right.
"If you are no traitors, open your gates," Sir Aimery called. "We'll make certain you're telling a true, and be on our way."
Yoren was chewing sour leaf.
"Told you. No one here but us. You got my word on that."
The knight in the spike helm laughed.
"The crow gives us his word." "You lost, old man," mocked one of the spearmen. "The war's a long way north of here." "I command you, once more, in King Joffrey's name, to prove the loyalty you profess and open these gates," said Sir Aimery.
For a long moment, Yoren considered, chewing. Then he spat.
"Don't think I will. So be it. You will defy the king's command, and so proclaim yourself rebels, black cloaks or no."
"Got me young boys in here," Yoren shouted down.
"Young boys and old men die the same."
Sir Aimery raised a languid fist, and a spear came hurtling from the fire-bright shadows behind. Yoren must have been the target, but it was Wath beside him who was hit. The spearhead went in his throat and exploded out the back of his neck, dark and wet. Wath grabbed at the shaft and fell boneless from the walk. "Storm the walls and kill them all," Sir Aimery said in a bored voice. More spears flew. Arya yanked down Hotpie by the back of his tunic. From outside came the rattle of armour, the scrape of swords on scabbards, the banging of spears on shields, mingled with curses and the hoofbeats of racing horses. A torch sailed spinning over their heads, trailing fingers of fire as it thumped down in the dirt of the yard.
"Blades!" Yoren shouted. "Spread apart! Defend the wall, whatever they hit! Koss, Ureg, hold the postern. Lummi, pull that spear out of Wath and get up where he was."
Hotpie dropped his short sword when he tried to unsheathe it. Arya shoved the blade back into his hand.
"I don't know how to sword fight," he said, white-eyed.
"It's easy," Arya said, but the lie died in her throat as a hand grasped the top of the parapet. She saw it by the light of the burning town, so clear that it was as if time had stopped. The fingers were blunt, calloused. Wiry black hairs grew between the knuckles. There was dirt under the nail of the thumb. Fear cuts deeper than swords, she remembered, as the top of a pot helm loomed up behind the hand. She slashed down hard, and needles, castle-forged steel, bit into the grasping fingers between the knuckles.
"Winterfell!" she screamed.
Blood spurted, fingers flew, and the helm face vanished as suddenly as it had appeared.
"Behind!"
Hotpie yelled. Arya whirled. The second man was bearded and helmetless, his dirk between his teeth to leave both hands free for climbing. As he swung his leg over the parapet, she dove her point at his eyes. Needle never touched him. He reeled backward and fell. I hope he falls on his face and cuts off his tongue.
"Watch them, not me," she screamed at Hotpie.
The next time someone tried to climb their part of the wall, the boy hacked at his hands with his short sword until the man dropped away. Sir Aimery had no ladders, but the Holdfast walls were rough-cut and unmortared, easy to climb, and there seemed to be no end to the foes. For each one Arya cut or stabbed or shoved back, another was coming over the wall. The knight in the spiked helm reached the rampart, but Yoren tangled his black banner around his spike and forced the point of his dirk through his armour while the man was fighting the cloth. Every time Arya looked up, more torches were flying, trailing long tongues of flame that lingered behind her eyes. She saw a gold lion on a red banner and thought of Joffrey, wishing he was here so she could drive needle through his sneery face. When four men assaulted the gate with axes, Koss shot them down with arrows, one by one. Dubber wrestled a man off the walk, and Lummy smashed his head with a rock before he could rise, and hooted until he saw the knife in Dubber's belly and realized he wouldn't be getting up either. Arya jumped over a dead boy no older than John, lying with his arm cut off. She didn't think she'd done it, but she wasn't sure. She heard Kyle beg for mercy before a knight with a wasp on his shield smashed his face with a spiked mace. Everything smelled of blood and smoke and iron and piss, but after a time it seemed like that was only one smell. She never saw how the skinny man got over the wall, but when he did, she fell on him with Gendry and Hot Pie. Gendry's sword shattered on the man's helm, tearing it off his head. Underneath, he was bald and scared-looking, with missing teeth and a speckly grey beard. But even as she was feeling sorry for him, she was killing him, shouting, "Winterfell! Winterfell!" while Hot Pie screamed, "Hot Pie!" beside her as he hacked at the man's scrawny neck. When the skinny man was dead, Gendry stole his sword and leapt downward into the yard to fight some more. Arya looked past him and saw steel shadows running through the holdfast, firelight shining off mail and blades, and she knew that they'd gotten over the wall somewhere, or broken through at the postern. She jumped down beside Gendry, landing the way Sirio had taught her. The night rang to the clash of steel and the cries of the wounded and dying. For a moment Arya stood uncertain, not knowing which way to go. Death was all around her. And then Yoren was there, shaking her, screaming in her face. "Boy," he yelled, the way he always yelled it. "Get out! It's done! We've lost! Urd up all you can! You and him and the others, the boys! You get them out! Now!" "How?" Arya said. "That trap!" he screamed. "Under the barn!" Quick as that, he was gone. Off to fight, sword in hand. Arya grabbed Gendry by the arm. "He said go," she shouted. "The barn, the way out." Through the slits of his helm, the bull's eyes shone with reflected fire. He nodded. They called Hot Pie down from the wall and found Lummy Greenhands where he lay bleeding from a spear thrust through his calf. They found Geron too, but he was hurt too bad to move. As they were running toward the barn, Arya spied the crying girl, sitting in the middle of the chaos, surrounded by smoke and slaughter. She grabbed her by the hand and pulled her to her feet as the others raced ahead. The girl wouldn't walk, even when slapped. Arya dragged her with her right hand while she held Needle in the left. Ahead, the night was sullen red. "The barn's on fire," she thought. Flames were licking up its side from where a torch had fallen on straw, and she could hear the screaming of the animals trapped within. Hot Pie stepped out of the barn. "Harry, come on! Lummy's gone! Leave her if she won't come!" Stubbornly, Arya dragged all the harder, pulling the crying girl along. Hot Pie scuttled back inside, abandoning them. But Gendry came back, the fire shining so bright on his polished helm that the horn seemed to glow orange. He ran to them and hoisted the crying girl up over his shoulder. "Run!" Rushing through the barn doors was like running into a furnace. The air was swirling with smoke. The back wall, a sheet of fire ground to roof. Their horses and donkeys were kicking and rearing and screaming. The poor animals, Arya thought. Then she saw the wagon, and the three men manacled to its bed. Biter was flinging himself against the chains, blood running down his arms from where the irons clasped his wrists. Rorg screamed curses, kicking at the wood. "Boy!" called Jake and Hagar. "Sweet boy!" The open trap was only a few feet ahead, but the fire was spreading fast, consuming the old wood and dry straw faster than she would have believed. Arya remembered the hound's horrible burned face. "Tunnel's narrow," Gendry shouted. "How do we get her through?" "Pull her," Arya said. "Push her." "Good boys, kind boys," called Jake and Agar, coughing. "Get the fucking chains off," Rogue screamed. Gendry ignored him. "You go first, then her, then me. Hurry, it's a long way." "When you split the firewood," Arya remembered, "where did you leave the axe?" "Out by the haven." He spared a glance for the chain men. "I'd save the donkeys first. There's no time." "You take her," she yelled. "You get her out. You do it." The fire beat at her back with red-hot wings as she fled the burning barn. It felt blessedly cool outside, but men were dying all around her. She saw Cuss throw down his blade to yield, and she saw them kill him where he stood. Smoke was everywhere. There was no sign of Yoren, but the axe was where Gendry had left it, by the woodpile outside the haven. As she wrenched it free, a mailed hand grabbed her arm. Spinning, Arya drove the head of the axe hard between his legs. She never saw his face, only the dark blood seeping between the links of his hauberk. Going back into the barn was the hardest thing she ever did. Smoke was pouring out of the open door like a writhing black snake, and she could hear the screams of the poor animals inside, donkeys and horses and men. She chewed her lip and darted through the door, crouching low where the smoke wasn't quite so thick. A donkey was caught in a ring of fire, shrieking in terror and pain. She could smell the stench of burning hair. The roof was gone up too, and things were falling down, pieces of flaming wood and bits of straw and hay. Arya put a hand over her mouth and nose. She couldn't see the wagon for the smoke, but she could still hear Biter screaming. She crawled toward the sound. And then a wheel was looming over her. The wagon jumped and moved half a foot when Biter threw himself against his chains again. Jaqen saw her, but it was too hard to breathe, let alone talk. She threw the axe into the wagon. Rorg caught it and lifted it above his head, rivers of sooty sweat pouring down his noseless face. Arya was running, coughing. She heard the steel crash through the old wood, and again, again. An instant later came a crack as loud as thunder, and the bottom of the wagon came ripping loose in an explosion of splinters. Arya rolled headfirst into the tunnel and dropped 5 feet. She got dirt in her mouth, but she didn't care. The taste was fine. The taste was mud and water and worms and life. Under the earth, the air was cool and dark. Above was nothing but blood and roaring red and choking smoke and the screams of dying horses. She moved her belt around so Needle would not be in her way and began to crawl. A dozen feet down the tunnel, she heard the sound, like the roar of some monstrous beast, and a cloud of hot smoke and black dust came billowing up behind her, smelling of hell. Arya held her breath and kissed the mud on the floor of the tunnel and cried. For whom, she could not say.
Brain. The stone wall was old and crumbling, but the sight of it across the field made the hairs on Brain's neck stand up. That was where the archers hid and slew poor Cleos Frey, she thought. But half a mile farther on, she passed another wall that looked much like the first and found herself uncertain. The rutted road turned and twisted, and the bare brown trees looked different from the green ones she remembered. Had she ridden past the place where Sir Jaime had snatched his cousin's sword from its scabbard? Where were the woods they'd fought in? The stream where they'd splashed and slashed at one another until they drew the brave companions down upon them? My lady, sir? Podrick never seemed certain what to call her. What are you looking for? Ghosts. A wall I rode by once. It does not matter. It was when Sir Jaime still had both his hands. How I loathed him with all his taunts and smiles. Stay quiet, Podrick. There may still be outlaws in these woods. The boy looked at the bare brown trees, the wet leaves, the muddy road ahead. I have a long sword, I can fight. Not well enough. Brain did not doubt the boy's courage, only his training. A squire he might be in name at least, but the men he'd squired for had served him ill. She had gotten his story out of him in fits and starts on the road from Duskendale. He was a lesser branch of the House Payne, an impoverished offshoot, sprouted from the loins of a younger son. His father had spent his life squiring for richer cousins and had sired Podrick upon a chandler's daughter he'd wed before going off to die in the Greyjoy Rebellion. His mother had abandoned him with one of those cousins when he was four, so she could run after a wandering singer who would put another baby in her belly. Podrick did not remember what she looked like. Sir Cedric Payne had been the nearest thing to a parent the boy had ever known, though from his stammered stories it seemed to Brian that Cousin Cedric had treated Podrick more like a servant than a son. When Casterly Rock called its banners, the knight had taken him along to tend his horse and clean his mail. Then Sir Cedric had been slain in the Riverlands, whilst fighting in Lord Tywin's host. Far from home, alone and penniless, the boy had attached himself to a fat hedge knight named Sir Lorimer the Belly, who was part of Lord Lefford's contingent, charged with protecting the baggage train. "The boys who guard the foodstuffs always eat the best," Sir Lorimer liked to say, until he was discovered with a salted ham he'd stolen from Lord Tywin's personal stores. Tywin Lannister chose to hang him as a lesson to other looters. Podrick had shared the ham and might have shared the rope as well, but his name had saved him. Sir Kevin Lannister took charge of him and sometime later sent the boy to squire for his nephew, Tyrion. Sir Cedric had taught Podrick how to groom a horse and check his shoes for stones, and Sir Lorimer had taught him how to steal, but neither had given him much training with a sword. The imp, at least, had dispatched him to the Red Keep's master-at-arms when they came to court, but during the bread riots, Sir Aaron Santagar had been amongst those slain, and that had been the end of Podrick's training. Brain cut two wooden swords from fallen branches to get a sense of Podrick's skills. The boy was slow of speech, but not of hand, she was pleased to learn. Though fearless and attentive, he was also underfed and skinny, and not near strong enough. If he had survived the Battle of the Blackwater, as he claimed, it could only be because no one thought him worth the killing. "You may call yourself a squire," she told him, "but I've seen pages half your age who could have beat you bloody. If you stay with me, you'll go to sleep with blisters on your hands and bruises on your arms most every night, and you'll be so stiff and sore you'll hardly sleep. You don't want that."
"I do," the boy insisted. "I want that, the bruises and the blisters. I mean, I don't, but I do, sir, my lady."
So far he had been true to his word, and Brian had been true to hers. Podrick had not complained. Every time he raised a new blister on his sword hand, he felt the need to show it to her proudly. He took good care of their horses, too. "He is still no squire," she reminded herself, "but I am no knight, no matter how many times he calls me sir." She would have sent him on his way, but he had nowhere to go. Besides, though Podrick said he did not know where Sansa Stark had gone, it might be that he knew more than he realized. Some chance remark, half remembered, might hold the key to Brian's quest.
"Sir, my lady," Podrick pointed, "there's a cart ahead."
Brian saw it, a wooden ox cart, two-wheeled and high-sided. A man and a woman were laboring in the traces, pulling the cart along the ruts toward Maidenpool. Farm folk, by the look of them. "Slowly now," she told the boy. "They may take us for outlaws. Say no more than you must, and be courteous."
"I will, sir, be courteous, my lady."
The boy seemed almost pleased by the prospect of being taken for an outlaw. The farm folk watched them warily as they came trotting up, but once Brian made it plain that she meant them no harm, they let her ride beside them.
"We used to have an ox," the old man told her, as they made their way through the weed-choked fields, lakes of soft mud and burnt and blackened trees, "but the wolves made off with him."
His face was red from the effort of pulling the cart.
"They took off our daughter, too, and had their way with her, but she come wandering back after the battle down at Duskendale. The ox never did.
The wolves ate him, I expect. The woman had little to add. She was younger than the man by 20 years, but never spoke a word, only looked at Brian the same way she might have looked at a two-headed calf. The Maid of Tarth had seen such eyes before. Lady Stark had been kind to her, but most women were just as cruel as men. She could not have said which she found most hurtful, the pretty girls with their waspish tongues and brittle laughter, or the cold-eyed ladies who hid their disdain behind a mask of courtesy. And common women could be worse than either. Maidenpool was all in ruins when last I saw it, she said. The gates were broken and half the town was burned. They rebuilt it some. This Tarly, he's a hard man, but a braver lord than Mouton. There's still outlaws in the woods, but not so many as there was. Tarly hunted down the worst of them and shortened them with that big sword of his. He turned his head and spat. You've seen no outlaws on the road? None. Not this time. The farther they had come from Duskendale, the emptier the road had been. The only travellers they'd glimpsed had melted away into the woods before they reached them, save for a big bearded septon they met walking south with 20 footsore followers. Such inns as they passed had either been sacked and abandoned or turned into armed camps. Yesterday they had encountered one of Lord Randall's patrols, bristling with longbows and lances. The horsemen had surrounded them while their captain questioned Brian, but in the end he'd let them continue on their way. "Be wary, woman. The next men you meet may not be as honest as my lads. The Hound has crossed the Trident with 100 outlaws, and it's said they're raping every wench they come upon and cutting off their teats for trophies." Brian felt obligated to pass along that warning to the farmer and his wife. The man nodded as she told him. But when she was done, he spat again and said, "Dogs and wolves and lions, may the others take them all. These outlaws won't dare come too near to Maidenpool, not so long as Lord Tarly has the rule there." Brian knew Lord Randall Tarly from her time with King Renly's host. Though she could not find it in herself to like the man, she could not forget the debt she owed him either. "If the gods are good, we will pass Maidenpool before he knows that I am there. The town will be restored to Lord Mouton once the fighting's done," she told the farmer. "His lordship has been pardoned by the king." "Pardoned?" The old man laughed. "For what? Sitting on his arse in his bloody castle? He sent men off to Riverrun to fight, but never went himself. Lions sacked his town, then wolves, then sellswords, and his lordship just sat safe behind his walls. His brother had never have hid like that. Sir Miles was bold as brass till that Robert killed him." More ghosts, Brian thought. "I am looking for my sister, a fair maid of 3 and 10. Perhaps you've seen her."
"I've not seen no maids, fair nor foul."
"No one has. But she had to keep asking."
"Mouton's daughter, she's a maid," the man went on. "Till the bedding, anyways. These eggs, they're for her wedding. Her and Tarly's son. The cooks will need eggs for cakes."
"They will. Lord Tarly's son. Young Dickens to be wed." She tried to recall how old he was. 8 or 10, she thought. Brian had been betrothed at 7 to a boy 3 years her senior, Lord Carron's younger son, a shy boy with a mole above his lip. They had only met the once on the occasion of their betrothal. 2 years later he was dead, carried off by the same chill that took Lord and Lady Carron and their daughters. Had he lived, they would have been wed within a year of her first flowering, and her whole life would have been different. She would not be here now, dressed in a man's mail and carrying a sword, hunting for a dead woman's child. More like she'd be at Nightsong, swaddling a child of her own and nursing another. It was not a new thought for Brian. It always made her feel a little sad, but a little relieved as well. The sun was half hidden behind a bank of clouds when they emerged from the blackened trees to find Maidenpool before them, with the deep waters of the bay beyond. The town's gates had been rebuilt and strengthened, Brian saw at once, and crossbowmen walked its pink stone walls once more. Above the gatehouse floated King Tommen's royal banner, a black stag and golden lion combatant on a field divided gold and crimson. Other banners displayed the Tali huntsman, but the red salmon of House Mouton flew only from their castle on its hill. At the portcullis they came upon a dozen guards armed with halberds. Their badges marked them for soldiers of Lord Tali's host, though none was Tali's own. She saw two centaurs, a thunderbolt, a blue beetle, and a green arrow, but not the striding huntsman of Horn Hill. Their sergeant had a peacock on his breast, its bright tail faded by the sun. When the farmers drew their cart up, he gave a whistle. "What's this now? Eggs?" He tossed one up, caught it, and grinned. "We'll take them." The old man squawked. "Our eggs is for Lord Mouton, for the wedding cakes and such. Have your hens, Laymore? I haven't had an egg in half a year. Here, don't say you weren't paid." He flung a handful of pennies at the old man's feet. The farmer's wife spoke up. "That's not enough," she said. "Not near enough." "I say it is," said the sergeant. "For them eggs, and you as well. Bring her here, boys. She's too young for that, old man." Two of the guards leaned their halberds against the wall and pulled the woman away from the cart, struggling. The farmer watched, grey-faced, but dared not move. Brain spurred her mare forward. "Release her." Her voice made the guards hesitate long enough for the farmer's wife to wrench free of their grasp. "This is none of your concern," one man said. "You mind your mouth, wench." Brain drew her sword instead. "Well now," the sergeant said, "naked steel. Seems to me I smell an outlaw. You know what Lord Tali does with outlaws?" He still held the egg he'd taken from the cart. His hand closed, and the yolk oozed through his fingers. "I know what Lord Randall does with outlaws," Brain said. "I know what he does with rapers, too." She had hoped the name might cow them, but the sergeant only flicked egg off his fingers and signaled to his men to spread out. Brain found herself surrounded by steel points. "What was it you were saying, wench? What is it that Lord Tali does to rapers?" A deeper voice finished. "He gelds them or sends them to the wall, sometimes both, and he cuts fingers off thieves." A languid young man stepped from the gatehouse, a sword belt buckled at his waist. The surcoat he wore above his steel had once been white, and here and there still was, beneath the grass stains and dried blood. His sigil was displayed across his chest, a brown deer dead and bound and slung beneath a pole. "Him." His voice was a punch in her stomach, his face a blade in her bowels. "Sir Hyle," she said stiffly. "Best let her by, lads," warned Sir Hyle Hunt. "This is Brain the Beauty, the Maid of Tarth, who slew King Renly and half his rainbow guard. She's as mean as she is ugly, and there's no one uglier, except perhaps for you, pisspot. But your father was the rear end of an aurochs, so you have a good excuse. Her father is the Even Star of Tarth." The guards laughed, but the halberds parted. "Shouldn't we seize her, sir?" the sergeant asked. "For killing Renly." "Why? Renly was a rebel. So were we all, rebels to a man, but now we're Tommen's loyal lads." The knight waved the farm folk through the gate. "His lordship's steward will be pleased to see those eggs. You'll find him in the market." The old man knuckled his forehead. "My thanks, my lord. You're a true knight, it's plain to see. Come, wife." They put their shoulders to the cart again and rumbled through the gate. Brain trotted after them with Podrick at her heels. "A true knight," she thought, frowning. Inside the town she reined up. The ruins of a stable could be seen off to her left, fronting on a muddy alley. Across from it, three half-dressed whores stood on the balcony of a brothel, whispering to one another. One looked a bit like a camp follower who had once come up to Brain to ask if she had a cunt or a cock inside her breeches. "That Rounsey may be the most hideous horse I've ever seen," said Sir Hyle of Podrick's Mount. "I am surprised that you're not riding it, my lady. Do you plan to thank me for my help?" Brain swung down off her mare. She stood a head taller than Sir Hyle. "One day I'll thank you in a melee, sir." "The way you thanked Red Ronnet?" Hunt laughed. He had a full, rich laugh, though his face was plain. An honest face, she'd thought once, before she learned better. Shaggy brown hair, hazel eyes, a little scar by his left ear. His chin had a cleft, and his nose was crooked, but he did laugh well, and often. "Shouldn't you be watching your gait?" He made a wry face at her. "My cousin Alan is off hunting outlaws. Doubtless he'll return with the hound's head gloating and covered in glory. Meanwhile, I am condemned to guard this gate, thanks to you. I hope you're pleased, my beauty. What is it that you're looking for?"
"A stable."
"Over by the east gate. This one burned." "I can see that."
"What you said to those men?" "I was with King Renly when he died, but it was some sorcery that slew him, sir. I swear it on my sword." She put her hand upon her hilt, ready to fight if Hunt named her a liar to her face.
"Aye, and it was the Knight of Flowers who carved up the Rainbow Guard. On a good day you might have been able to defeat Sir Emmon. He was a rash fighter, and he tired easily. Royce, though? No. Sir Robar was twice the swordsman that you are. Though you're not a swordsman, are you? Is there such a thing as a sword's wench? What quest brings the maid to Maidenpool, I wonder? Searching for my sister, a maid of 3 and 10, she almost said. But Sir Hyle would know she had no sisters. There's a man I seek, at a place called the Stinking Goose. I thought Brian the Beauty had no use for men. There was a cruel edge to his smile. The Stinking Goose, an apt name, that, the stinking part at least. It's by the harbour. First you will come with me to see his lordship. Brian did not fear Sir Hyle, but he was one of Randall Tarley's captains. A whistle, and 100 men would come running to defend him. Am I to be arrested? What? For Renly? Who was he? We've changed kings since then, some of us twice. No one cares, no one remembers. He laid a hand lightly on her arm. This way, if you please. She wrenched away. I would thank you not to touch me. Thanks at last, he said with a wry smile. When last she had seen Maidenpool, the town had been a desolation, a grim place of empty streets and burned homes. Now the streets were full of pigs and children, and most of the burned buildings had been pulled down. Vegetables had been planted in the lots where some once stood. Merchants' tents and knights' pavilions took the place of others. Brain saw new houses going up, a stone inn rising where a wooden inn had burned, a new slate roof on the town sept. The cool autumn air rang to the sounds of saw and hammer. Men carried timber through the streets, and quarrymen drove their wagons down muddy lanes. Many wore the striding huntsmen on their breasts. The soldiers are rebuilding the town, she said, surprised. They would sooner be dicing, drinking, and fucking, I don't doubt, but Lord Randall believes in putting idle men to work. She had expected to be taken to the castle. Instead, Hunt led them toward the busy harbour. The traders had returned to Maidenpool, she was pleased to see. A galley, a galleass, and a big 2-masted cog were in port, along with a score of little fishing boats. More fishermen were visible out on the bay. If the Stinking Goose yields nothing, I will take passage on a ship, she decided. Gulltown was only a short voyage away. From there she could make her way to the Eyrie easily enough. They found Lord Tarley in the fish market, doing justice. A platform had been thrown up beside the water from which his lordship could look down upon the men accused of crimes. To his left stood a long gallows with ropes enough for 20 men. 4 corpses swung beneath it. One looked fresh, but the other 3 had plainly been there for some time. A crow was pulling strips of flesh from the ripe ruins of one of the dead men. The other crows had scattered, wary of the crowd of townsfolk who'd gathered in hopes of someone's being hanged. Lord Randall shared the platform with Lord Mouton, a pale, soft, fleshy man in a white doublet and red breeches, his ermine cloak pinned at the shoulder by a red-gold brooch in the shape of a salmon. Tarley wore mail and boiled leather and a breastplate of grey steel. The hilt of a greatsword poked up above his left shoulder. Heartsbane, it was named, the pride of his house. A stripling, in a rough-spun cloak and soiled jerkin, was being heard when they came up. "I never hurt no one, my lord," Brain heard him say. "I only took what the Septons left when they run off. If you've got to take my finger for that, do it." "It is customary to take a finger from a thief," Lord Tarly replied in a hard voice. "But a man who steals from a sept is stealing from the gods." He turned to his captain of guards. 7 fingers. Leave his thumbs."
7?
The thief paled. When the guard seized hold of him, he tried to fight, but feebly, as if he were already maimed. Watching him, Brain could not help think of Sir Jamie and the way he'd screamed when Zolo's Arak came flashing down. The next man was a baker, accused of mixing sawdust in his flour. Lord Randall fined him 50 silver stags. When the baker swore he had not that much silver, his lordship declared that he could have a lash for every stag that he was short. He was followed by a haggard, grey-faced whore, accused of giving the pox to 4 of Tarly's soldiers. "Wash out her private parts with lye and throw her in a dungeon," Tarly commanded. As the whore was dragged off sobbing, his lordship saw Brain on the edge of the crowd, standing between Podrick and Sir Hyle. He frowned at her, but his eyes betrayed not a flicker of recognition. A sailor off the galleas came next. His accuser was an archer of Lord Mouton's garrison, with a bandaged hand and a salmon on his breast. "If it please my lord, this bastard put his dagger through my hand. He said I was cheating him at dice." Lord Tarly took his gaze away from Brain to consider the men before him. "Were you?"
"No, my lord, I never."
"For theft, I will take a finger. Lie to me and I will hang you. Shall I ask to see these dice?"
"The dice?"
The archer looked to Mouton, but his lordship was gazing at the fishing boats. The bowman swallowed.
"Might be I... them dice, they're lucky for me, it's true, but I..."
Tarly had heard enough. "Take his little finger. He can choose which hand. A nail through the palm for the other." He stood. "We're done. March the rest of them back to the dungeons. I'll deal with them on the morrow." He turned to beckon Sir Hyle forward. Brain followed.
"My lord," she said, when she stood before him. She felt 8 years old again.
"My lady, to what do we owe this honor?"
"I have been sent to look for...
She hesitated. "How will you find him if you do not know his name? Did you slay Lord Renly?"
"No."
Tarly weighed the word. "He is judging me, as he judged those others." "No," he said at last. "You only let him die." He had died in her arms, his life's blood drenching her. Brain flinched.
"It was sorcery. I never..."
"You never?" His voice became a whip. "Aye. You never should have donned mail nor buckled on a sword. You never should have left your father's hall. This is a war, not a harvest ball. By all the gods, I ought to ship you back to Tarth."
"Do that, and answer to the throne."
Her voice sounded high and girlish when she wanted to sound fearless.
"Podrick, in my bag you'll find a parchment. Bring it to his lordship."
Tarly took the letter and unrolled it, scowling. His lips moved as he read. "The king's business." "What sort of business?" "Lie to me and I will hang you."
Sansa Stark.
"If the Stark girl were here, I'd know it. She's run back north, I'll wager, hoping to find refuge with one of her father's bannermen. She had best hope she chooses the right one."
"She might have gone to the Vale instead," Brain heard herself blurt out, "to her mother's sister."
Lord Randall gave her a contemptuous look. "Lady Lysa is dead. Some singer pushed her off a mountain. Littlefinger holds the Eyrie now, though not for long. The lords of the Vale are not the sort to bend their knees to some up-jumped jackanapes whose only skill is counting coppers." He handed her back the letter. "Go where you want and do as you will. But when you're raped, don't look to me for justice. You will have earned it with your folly." He glanced at Sir Hyle. "And you, sir, should be at your gate. I gave you the command there, did I not?"
"You did, my lord,"
said Heil Hunt, but I thought, you think too much. Lord Tarly strode away. Lysa Tully is dead. Brain stood beneath the